up in here like drinking water. I must be out of my head, that's someone's daughter. I hear you falling hard, I'm falling over. I know you can, but I'm scared of all your favor.
Hashtag pure sex, man.
Woo!
Volume 2.
Carlos Gonzalez. That was a solid way to end that night last night. I got to have Vin Scully on my TV until like 12:30, which is awesome.
I was just so excited that they actually just ended.
They won a game!
Awful stretch.
Hey! They won a game.
Oh, second worst losing streak in Rockies history is finally over. And in improbable fashion, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
Jimmy Garcia had been awesome this year, save for this week. He blew almost blew a game against the Marlins on Monday and then blew it last night. So good for the Rockies catching him on a bad stretch because, man, he had been lights out up to this week.
He threw a couple of pitches last night that were just like made you uncomfortable. They were so they were so well spotted and well placed. I'm trying to remember who it was that he struck out.
He struck out Blackman and DJ.
It was DJ. The pitch that struck out DJ, he just blew DJ away.
It was a fastball right above the belt, 96.
And it was like one of those moments where like Garcia, when he got the ball back after it, was just like, come at me, bro. It was like one of those like my best against your best, I'm not gonna lose.
Yeah.
And then he left one. He didn't even leave one like out over the plate to Cargo. Cargo just went vintage Cargo and destroyed that ball.
Yeah, it was pure sex volume 2.
Hey, so welcome in. It's episode number 44. Of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mon. He's Anthony Masterson. We are recording this on Friday, May 15th, and pretty excited about the show today.
Pretty excited. We're discussing whether or not this should be the last episode of the PDP.
We say it a lot.
We say it all the time.
But maybe one of these days we're going to be serious about it.
One of these days it's going to be the apex of the PDP.
One of these days, your father and I are not going to be able to put you through everything. You're going to have to learn.
And we will turn this podcast around. You kids, don't shut up in the backseat.
Ben Badler of Baseball America joins the show.
He's actually on the show today. That's amazing.
Ben Badler. If you don't read Ben Badler, if you haven't read Ben Badler, if you don't follow Ben Badler on Twitter, you're wrong.
Do it right now.
He's on Twitter at Ben Badler, national writer for Baseball America, and covers a ton of international stuff. That's kind of where I nerd out, and that's some. I think Ben does some of his best work. Covers a lot of Cuban stuff because it covers a lot of Latin American things, Asian baseball, World Baseball Classic, all that kind of stuff. So Ben's awesome. Go give him a follow, and he's really joining the show after a year of inside jokes. We get Ben on the show.
So when we explain to him the inside joke, do you think he's going to hang up immediately?
I certainly hope so. Well, we don't even know if we're actually going to get to talk to him yet.
I mean,
you said before we got on, like, wouldn't it be great if he just backed out at the last minute? We'd be like, no, we really had him.
If we get an email saying like, oh man, sorry, I'm really busy, something came up, I can't do it today, like, that's going to damage our entire credibility that we have as a free podcast.
Do we have any?
I mean, probably not.
I wouldn't imagine.
I mean, like, I live in Los Angeles, so I have credibility, obviously.
You're like that guy screaming behind home plate last night.
Oh, my God. Like, I'm serious. Like, also, I said this on Twitter, but, like, you know that he was like, man, I'm going to get this video, and I'm going to put it on my demo reel tomorrow, and I'm going to go to my – talk to an agency. I'm like, oh, God.
Mike Mishlinski was the home plate umpire last night. He tried to eject a fan
in the middle
of the ninth inning last night, and just, like, does no one work at Dodger Stadium?
No.
It's so rare that you see an umpire do that in the first place.
Yeah, and I have been there because I've been at an extra innings Dodgers-Rockies game, and once extra innings hit, like, I went down just to see if I can go get closer to the field, and there was not an usher to be found. What? So I went and just sat right behind home plate.
So it's the opposite of Coors Field, where they check your tickets with the veracity of, like, state border control guards in Contagion at Coors Field.
Yes.
Like, you can't move down to within four sections of the dugout after the seventh inning in a 10-run game. So, oh, sorry, can't sit here. But at Dodger Stadium, maybe the best stadium in baseball, they just don't care.
It's Thunderdome, whatever. Basically.
Awesome.
And speaking of that, it has also been raining here the last 2 days.
I know, obviously, the
rain delay last night, but it's been raining all night, and I think it's just now starting to taper off.
Look at that.
I know.
It's amazing.
But good God, we needed it.
That's there were two rainouts in the California League last night. I wonder when the last time there were multiple rainouts in the Cal League on the same day was.
Well, it's funny. The only games last night that had a potential to be rain delayed were in Los Angeles and San Diego.
And both were.
What are the odds that happens? Yeah, yeah. And both were. Yeah.
One of the most entertaining things I've ever watched on a baseball field is during the 2007 World Baseball Classic, watching the San Diego Padres grounds crew try to put the tarp on, because they never have to put the tarp on.
Yeah,
so
they,
it's like
they have
no idea how to do it, which was so much fun.
I know we talked about it a little bit last night on the account, but man, do you remember how awful tarp pulls are? If you guys don't know how bad a tarp pull is, like, oh man, I really
volunteer.
Wish,
I'm sure they just let you
I
help
really
out.
I wish I knew
field.
How to pull a tarp. No,
yeah,
you don't.
Yeah, no.
No, you don't. No. Stop saying that because you're wrong.
That's
and an
like,
idiot.
Oh, I wonder what it feels like to have my appendix burst inside of me. Poor Walt Weiss. That's like, it's like wondering the same. Like, why would you wonder something so terrible? Don't wonder about tarp pulls. It's not cool.
No. Yeah. Just, yeah, stop it. I wonder what getting three root canals at the same time and then getting punched at the balls would feel like. No, you don't.
There's
no, you
no
don't.
Reason to wonder that. Why would you wonder that?
Why would you wonder that? Also, I found it very hilarious that if Walt was still in the hospital last night, he probably couldn't watch the game.
Yeah, that's probably true. Because in Los Angeles, no one
I think Nick Groke pointed that out on Twitter yesterday. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that is not possible for
him.
That's
a really good point.
Which is hilarious.
Hey, we got some housekeeping items to get to. Today, we were brought into the show by the band Rumors Follow. They're a local Denver band playing a couple of shows here coming up very soon as well. Today's lead-in song was Flavor by Rumors Follow. You can follow them on the old Google machine, R-U-M-O-U-R-S, in case you are so inclined. They're going to be playing
the
Denver.
Like they're the British spelling.
They're the British spelling, but they're from
fancy.
Denver.
Oh.
So that's something.
Denver Brits.
I like it. We also had a guy get into it with us on Twitter the other day who's British and lives in Denver, big baseball fan. I like him for that reason alone. That's awesome.
Nice.
He got over rounders and cricket. today we were let in by the song Flavor. Rumors Follow they're going to be playing the Denver
Wait,
Day of Rock.
Is Flavor spelled with a U?
No, it is not.
What?
So I was wondering if you were going to ask that.
Ugh.
Normal spelling on Flavor. American spelling. Denver Day of Rock, a free show on the 16th Street Mall, which looks like it's going to be a ton of fun. I'm going to be out of town, which is super lame, but a lot of good bands who are going to be playing there, including Rumors Follow. St. Paul and the Broken Bones are going to be there. Really bummed that I'm going to miss out on that. DenverDayOfRock.com for information on that show. Also, Monday, May 25th, they'll be playing at the Boulder Boulder. They'll play along the course near the 7-kilometer marker. So if you're running the Boulder Boulder or you're taking part in the Boulder Boulder, Rumors Follow will be there. So big thanks to those guys for leading
That's
us
awesome.
Into and out of the show today. And also, episode number 44, Anthony.
Ooh.
What do we got coming up for the Memorial Edition today?
Something to pick from. Nobody wearing it this year, but last year Ryan Wheeler wore it. We can go Roy Oswalt in 2013.
Yeah!
Our good friend Juan Nicasio, who looked very good last night.
Yeah, last night was just a great night.
Great. He wore it for 3 years in 2011 to 2013. Edgemer Escalona in 2010. Micah Bowie in 2008. Alberto Arias and Ramon Ortiz both wore it in the Rocktober run in 07. Preston Wilson from 2003 to 2005. That could be a candidate. Mario Encarnacion in 2001. Rolando Araujo wore it in the year 2000. Mike DeJean, reliever, wore it from 97 to 2000. Alan Cockrell in 96. And Marvin Freeman from 94 to 1996. Tyler, who do you think?
I think I'm going to go Preston Wilson.
Preston Wilson.
I was
okay.
a fan of Preston Wilson for his short little Denver tenure because
sure.
he really broke out. And Preston Wilson was an all-star in his first year here, played 155 games, slashed .282, .343, .537. He drove home 141 runs that year and hit 36 homers in 2003. I liked Preston Wilson. He was kind of a fun one. He was, you know, he's by the way, he's Mookie Wilson's nephew.
Yes.
But I liked Preston Wilson. I'm going to go Preston Wilson. The only other contender who I would sort of throw in here would be Marvin Freeman because he was fun.
And it's kind of like Morgan Freeman, but it's not.
And also, according to Baseball America, his nickname was Starvin' Marvin.
Like from the South Park episode?
Evidently. I assume it's because he's listed as 6'7", 200 pounds.
But like that, but no, that doesn't compute. From 94 to 96, South Park wasn't even started yet.
No, I'm sure somebody thought of it just based on his physique. Marvin Freeman, I did not recall this. Marvin Freeman finished fourth in the National League Cy Young voting in 1994.
Because they were like, wow, somebody in Colorado's doing that? That's cool.
He went 10-2 with a 2.80 ERA in 19 games, 18 starts. What? Wow.
Who the hell else is involved
Who remembered that?
Greg Maddux won it. Ken Hill from Montreal. Then Brett Saberhagen the year before he came to the Rockies.
Yeah, it worked out well.
Doug Drabek. Marvin Freeman was worth 4.5 wins above replacement that year.
Wow.
Danny Jackson for Philly finished 6th. John Franco. And then Rod Beck, 2 closers there, 7th and 8th.
That's
incredible.
Crazy to me.
He had the second best ERA plus in the National League that year behind Greg Maddux.
Who was the highest finish for a Rockies pitcher in Cy Young voting?
I would imagine Ubaldo, no?
That's what I would have thought, but I'm not sure, actually. I don't know if he finished higher than 4th. Let's do some research here. I'm just talking about things before I bring them up. He did finish 3rd. He finished 3rd. So Ubaldo's got to be the highest.
I can't imagine anybody finishing higher than that.
Who knew? I don't remember that about Marvin Freeman.
No.
Wow. So anyway, there's episode 44. Maybe we'll go with Marvin Freeman then, just because of that. Just on that honor, he didn't get the Cy Young, so instead he'll get a PDP Memorial Edition named after
That's
him.
That's fine. So okay. Why not? I'm down with that.
Congratulations, Marvin Freeman. Let's get down to business. Ben Badler from Baseball America coming up here shortly, but the Rockies end the losing streak last night, and I tweeted last night from the PDP account, there are not many days that started more crappily and ended better in franchise history than yesterday. Troy Tulowitzki is supposed to be meeting with his agent, possibly looking at a trade to get out of town. Now we're hearing that's not the case. And by the end of the night, Cargo is hitting a 430-foot home run to end the losing streak. Yesterday was crazy, man.
I mean, it was. And just thank God that it's all over. Because they needed something to kick them in the ass. Because the whole game, you know, considering when they hit the delay and you had a rally going, like, oh, well, the Dodgers are going to cancel the games like they did last week in Denver, and they're going to get screwed out of a win again, and then you get late innings. You got the Dodgers bullpen who's pitching very well this year. Yimi Garcia's barely been touched. And you're like, well, he's a strikeout two guys, got a couple guys on base, you know, somehow with Nick Hundley and Drew Stubbs getting base hits, and then Cargo coming up with a big smash, like, it was just something that they needed so badly. They needed something to go right for them, and somehow it actually worked.
Yeah, they needed a spark of some kind. And what I think was kind of interesting is, you know, Tulo said, I want to be the guy who helps this team out of this losing streak. I need to play better.
Yada,
we all need to play better, whatever. But I like that this team responded that night. I mean, maybe it wasn't the best wire-to-wire game, but there were a whole lot of teams who would have just packed it in going into the ninth inning against Yimi Garcia and, you know, a two-run deficit in Dodger Stadium after an hour and 25-minute rain delay. And, the Rockies battled. They had some good at-bats there. And that win, to me, shows a lot of backbone. It's tough to say that after an 11-game losing streak, but I like what you see in a win like that, especially that it comes off the bat of Cargo, too.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard rumors that on every single day of baseball, like, teams win. I've heard that's actually
what?
True. Yeah, no. I've
East Coast teams? Probably.
No, there's like half
teams?
The teams every day, an entire slate of games, win a game.
No, that doesn't happen.
No, like, it's not an East Coast bias thing, dude. Like, I'm not just.
This is an ESPN thing.
I'm not just BSing you here. You can't BS a BSer, all right?
Like, man, you can't convince Woody Page that half the teams win on baseball games. You can't convince him of that scam.
Because we don't see it that often. We don't see it that often. But last night, the Rockies tried it for once, and it seemed to work out for them.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
I enjoyed it. I was a fan. I also sort of wish that they played like 2 time zones away so they could play late at night, because I work until 1 in the morning, and so it was nice having them on TV until like 12.
Yeah.
It was great.
And it's even nicer getting Cargo to get that hit, as you mentioned, because, man, he really needed that hit.
Yeah, quite badly.
Like, he's the second worst Rockies player, really, who's played a lot in terms of batting average, still hitting just 192 this year. His OPS at 588, even with that homer last night. He reached base 3 times last night, had a couple of walks as well, which is ironic that he's the one taking the walks on this team. He's leading the team with 10.
Right?
10.
Right?
The team leader has 10 walks on May 15th.
Well, let's dive
let's
into
let's
that.
Let's segue into this.
The Rockies get the win last night. They snapped the losing streak. Colorado with the victory, you know, still not exactly closing the gap in the National League West, but, you know, people are so eager to bury this team. They're they're 7 games under 500. That sucks. But the Milwaukee Brewers are 11 games under 500. The Phillies are 10 games under 500. They come into Coors Field next. Rockies are 8.5 games back. You go on one good, you know, they put together a modest winning streak right now. Let's say you win 5 in a row, and you're right back into sort of 500 mix. So, you know, it's May 15th. Let's all pump the brakes a little bit. But this offense has definitely been concerning, and it's something that Anthony really wanted to address and touch on a little bit there. Anthony, fire away. Get on your soapbox. Do you have your soapbox out?
Yeah, I'm literally on top of my soapbox because those are things that still exist. Who buys boxes of soap?
No. Ah, bring me a box of soap, Sam.
Ah. I'm on my body wash box. So this, just the last 3 days, let's just say this. The Rockies have 36 strikeouts and just 3 walks over the last 3 games.
Is that good? Hitters, by the way. We're not talking about pitchers.
Sorry. Rockies hitters have 36 strikeouts and 3 walks this season. On the year, they have 61 walks in 31 games. That is by far the lowest amount in baseball. The next closest team, the Kansas City Royals, has 74 walks. So there are 13 walks back. Their plate appearances per walk is by far the worst in baseball as well. The Royals are right up there as well. And you see the trends starting since the beginning of last year when Blake Doyle was basically plucked out of obscurity by Walt Weiss to take over the hitting coach job when Dante Bichette resigned. Doyle was a guy who's never been a coach in the major leagues before. His playing career was limited to the minors, but he knew Walt Weiss from when Weiss was a 14-year-old who went to a camp, and Doyle runs a lot of baseball camps. And he immediately sought out Weiss, converted him from a pitcher to a shortstop, and then apparently kept contact with Weiss throughout the rest of his career. So when Bichette resigned, he brought on Blake Doyle to become the hitting coach. And you see a problem arising with this hire going back to the last 2 years. So it's been since the start of 2014 season. Since then, the Rockies are last of the National League in walks with 458. The only team worse is the Kansas City Royals, ironically enough. But they had a weird year last year. Obviously, they led the league in strikeouts and walks. Last in the league in walks, the league in strikeouts, but also last in the league in homers and, you know, had the World Series thing. So they're weird. We can go with that. They're also last in the NL in walk rate, 29th in MLB. They've seen the second fewest pitches in baseball and the second fewest pitches per plate appearance in baseball in that time frame. They are 13th in strikeouts, and we have the caveat here, of course, with the fact the Rockies had a very good offense last year overall. In that time, they're 5th in runs per game, they're 1st in extra base hits, but that is to be expected by a team performing half their games at Coors Field. Now, the problem arises when you look at the history of the Colorado Rockies and you see the years that were successful with this team, namely 07 and 09. Those were the 2 years the Rockies had their most walks in a single season in franchise history. They had 660 walks in 09, they had 622 walks in 2007. They made the playoffs both of those years. And it's not just walks, of course, that makes an offense tick. But if you are able to take walks and take more pitches, you're able to create more base runners and make pitchers work a little harder. And maybe when they're working from the stretch and paying attention to a base runner, they will make a mistake. And maybe you can take advantage of those mistakes, which allows for more runs to score and gives your pitchers a better cushion to work with. And right now, the Rockies, since the tenure of Blake Doyle began at the beginning of 2014, have been so over-aggressive with their approach at the plate that their inability to take walks right now especially is very much hampering their offense this season.
It was Alan Cockrell who was the hitting coach on that 2007 team, by the way, and then after Jim Tracy took over midway through the 2009 season, it was Don Baylor who was the hitting coach on that team. And I think when Blake Doyle was hired, I mean, I remember when they announced that hire, and I was like, what the hell? Who? What? Blake Doyle has two brothers who played in the major leagues, and he's not one of them, and had never coached at the professional ranks, and was definitely a pretty big head-scratcher of a hire. But the Rockies last year went out and finished tops in the National League in offense, and I think because of that, people kind of just thought, like, oh, yeah, well, yeah.
He's probably fun.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, how bad are you really going to screw up by not being able to, you know, coach an offense to success at Coors Field? But, yeah, the Rockies are not the offense that they need to be, and you kind of – you put that in the crosshairs because you think, like, if they can't get out of this, do people really have confidence in Blake Doyle to be the one to get him out of it?
Right now, the Rockies are 21st in runs per game in baseball, averaging just under 4 runs per game as a team.
With several former batting champions in the lineup and guys like Nolan Arenado who are superstars in the making and DJ LeMahieu who's hitting out of his mind. Like, this offense is not what this offense should be, and it does make you sort of wonder what is going on behind the scenes, because I think that was a very underrated, bizarre move when they hired Blake Doyle that didn't get a whole lot of traction. And now it's kind of, you know, kind of starting to wonder.
I mean, I want to point out a quote from an article Thomas Harding wrote back right before the 2014 season began on March 30th of 2014. So when explaining the hiring of Doyle, this is what Walt Weiss thought about it, because as we mentioned, he had not worked as a full-time coach for a major league team. He just played in the minor leagues. It says, but Weiss is banking on Doyle's passion and teaching skills to help an offense that traditionally performs big at home and struggles away from Coors Field. Quote, the phrase I like to use is he's going to bleed with the players, Weiss said. From a player's perspective, that's really what they're looking for from a coach. That's what he really does well on top of his knowledge of the game. I find a lot of things wrong with that quote. I would imagine as a player, you would want a coach who is going to tell you what you are doing wrong when you are struggling, not to just commiserate when you go 0-4. Like, Tulo comes up to Doyle after the game and goes, hey Blake, I went 0-4, and Blake Doyle's like cutting himself, going like, I know, I went 0-5.
Let's bleed just together,
oh,
brother.
My God, I want to bleed with you. No. No, you want to go to your hitting coach after you go 0-4 and say, hey, coach, did you see anything? And he goes, yes, I saw this and this and this and this. And then you go out the next day and you go 2-4 and go, hey, thanks, coach. You don't want a guy to commiserate with. You want a guy to help you when you're going through struggles. And that's what the Rockies are doing right now. And there's obviously some disconnect somewhere along the line with the approach that Blake Doyle is telling these guys to make, because this year, some of the guys are on their worst walk rates of their careers. Tulo still has 2 GD walks 31 games into the season. I don't even know how that's possible. He's walked as many times as Drew Stubbs has in 37 at-bats. Tulowitzki has 114 at-bats right now. Justin Morneau has 3 walks in 100 at-bats. Carlos Gonzalez leads the team with 10. He doesn't walk ever. He's at 10 in 104 at-bats. That's a decent walk rate for him in his career. Like, I don't understand it. I don't get it whatsoever. I don't know if that's just guys struggling and compounding it by thinking, oh, man, I got to go out and try to hit like a 3-run homer with nobody on base. I don't know if that's it or not. But the fact that Willene Rosario has half as many walks right now as Troy Tulowitzki does should tell you everything you need to know.
This coaching staff has gone through a whole lot of changes in that position. Dwayne Espy held the Rockies hitting coach job from 2003 to 2006. Since then, 5 guys have held it, none for more than 2 seasons. Doyle's the 5th in that line. And, you know, and the Rockies still perform pretty well offensively, but it's right now that's where I think they're missing something is nobody seems to be stepping in and saying, all right, this is a big issue and this is how we get it changed, because we don't see the approaches really change from night to night. And yeah, if I am a professional athlete, maybe I don't want somebody constantly coming up to me and saying, all right, here's what I see you're doing wrong. Here's what you need to tinker with, whatever. But maybe a little bit more assertiveness from this coaching staff to say, like, things are not working the way that they should be working. And, I mean, obviously we're not, you know, in closed-door meetings with this team to know how they really do it. But it certainly doesn't – when you look at the hire and you kind of piece together the way that this offense has looked since that hire happened – you don't really come away blown away by Blake Doyle, by former high school hitting academy instructor Blake Doyle.
Oh, Tulo, take a pitch. Like, just
maybe.
I mean, Tulo's never a guy that's going to walk 100 times a year, but at least had decent walk rates throughout his career. This year is 2 walks. 2 walks. It's May 15th, and he's played almost every game.
awesome.
That's awesome. Almost inexcusable for a superstar like that. Because everything else about Tulo's game so far this year has been fine. Defense has been fine. His overall hitting has been okay. Not what we saw last year, but it's still been workable.
It's just there's too much talent in this lineup. There's too much talent on this team to have this offense look the way that it's looked.
Yes.
You know, and yeah, I mean, I think it's something as simple as guys aren't seeing enough pitches. Guys aren't taking enough free things that opposing pitching staffs are trying to hand them. And that we talk about how the Rockies struggle to build innings. They don't take advantage of other teams' mistakes. That's why you struggle to build innings.
Yeah.
You know, when you're not putting guys on base, when somebody's trying to hand you a free base, that is really problematic. And that's something that this team really needs to try to get figured out before it's, you know, a little bit too late to pull yourselves back out of this tailspin that they were in for the last week or so. And yeah, it will be, I would not be surprised. I mean, we know how loyal the administration has been in years past, but this year that's looked very different. And if this offense continues to struggle, you wonder how long it's going to be before Jeff Breidich says, Blake Doyle wasn't my hire. You know, we got to get somebody in here who's going to work with this offense.
Yeah. And something has to change. If not an approach thing, then a personnel thing, because right now it's not working. It's not working at all.
Man, and look at the numbers of
there are too many amazing hitters in this lineup to not be putting up at least 5-6 runs a night. And right now they're 21st in the league in runs and last in the league in walks, and they have been since Blake Doyle took over.
20 fewer walks than the next lowest team total in the National League. Pittsburgh Pirates hitters have walked 81 times. Rockies hitters have walked 61 times. 20 fewer. The most walks in the league, shocking here, the Los Angeles Dodgers have walked over 2 times the Rockies total, 138 walks this season.
That's amazing.
Wow. So that's just a little thing to marinate, because it's I would imagine that we might hear a little bit more about that before the season is over. One of those guys who has not really been a selective hitter, still having a pretty decent season, but he was the man of the hour yesterday prior to game day, and that's Troy Tulowitzki. And Anthony, did you happen to go find him for breakfast yesterday?
Yeah, I know.
You're in the same city.
Yeah, I know, and it, obviously it's a very small town, yep. So I was able to know exactly where he was.
Maybe he went to that little like old timey like country cafe that we went to.
Yeah, no, he did, and we had some nice, we had some eggs, we had some Louisiana hot links.
What did I have there? I think I had the corned beef. I think yes, I had the corned beef and ash.
Yeah, corned beef and ash, which is
what's that place called?
Is it the S? No, Ronnie's Diner.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah,
yeah, that was a good one.
Went there. I got a chorizo bowl. He had some egg whites and some avocado because he's, you know, like that.
Because he's healthy.
Yeah, whatever.
Professional athlete and all.
Yeah.
But anyway, here's what happened. Troy Tulowitzki met with his agent, Paul Cohen. Now, this all started on Tuesday. Paul Cohen told the New York Post that they were meeting to discuss whether or not Tulo should ask the Rockies for a trade. Told the New York Post, quote, to say that it's not a possibility would be silly, and then said later, quote, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, unquote, to see why people are talking about this more. And then Tulo, yesterday, after meeting with his agent, said, quote, the one thing I do want to make clear is that I don't know where the talk came from of me demanding a trade. There is no talk like that and never has been. And my relationship with the Rockies, we never wanted it to get to that point.
I mean,
all right.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there's...
First of all, how bad is your agent? If that's the case, if you didn't tell your agent to do this, what?
Well, I think this is... I'd imagine it's a calculated thing.
No,
it is. You know, a good cop, bad cop thing. You know, he's going to come out and say, I didn't tell my agent to say that. And the agent's going to be like... Because that's how agents actually talk. Agents always talk like that. And they always... They hold their hands like Mr. Burns at all times. And they always snicker and cackle like... That's how agents actually talk. But,
I think so.
No, this is... It's probably a move by Tulo, and it's fine. If he wants to say the right things, then that's what he should be doing. You know, doing them is a completely different thing altogether. Now, if he wants to go and, you know, quietly request a trade from Jeff Breidich and the organization, then that's one thing. And they'd be stupid not to explore it. But do I think it's going to happen? Absolutely not. You know, we've talked about here plenty of times.
Not right now, anyway.
No, they would need to get bowled over. To
it's
trade
May 15th.
And right now his trade value is probably at its lowest it's been in a long time.
it's May 15th, if they're going to explore this, they're not going to explore it in mid-May. Even if Tula would have gone to the organization yesterday and said, yeah, I'm done, I want out, I want to trade.
They'd be like, well, tough.
And it's not like they're going to trade him next week. Like, then I think you say, okay, Tula, we'll keep our ears open.
Sure.
You know, like, this... players are strong in Major League Baseball. The players' union is strong in Major League Baseball, but it doesn't mean that Tulo just goes and says, I want to trade, and he's gone by 3 days later.
Yeah, that's not how that works at all.
And Tulo's no idiot, and Paul Cohen is no idiot. They're not going to demand a trade when Tulo's trade value is as low as it has ever been.
No, and this is something that comes up every single year with the Rockies and
every
Tulo. Like, oh, well, maybe they should trade Tulo, right? Tulo's not happy because they're not winning. No shit. Who the hell would be happy with not winning?
Could you imagine the salivating that took place when that column came out in the Post columnist room? In the studio, I don't know, the old lady's living room where they filmed that online televised sports show?
Like the retirement community's living room. Yeah, like the
where they cut up old used couch covers from the 70s and make them into shirts. but like, it's not, this isn't happening. And even if it was happening at this point, the Rockies just snapped an 11 game losing streak. Is anybody like that devastated over it? If the Rockies said like, all right, we understand 2015 probably wasn't going to be our year anyway. We wanted to see how we were going to go for 6 weeks of the season. We've obviously seen that this team's going to struggle. So yeah, we're going to go after the best possible prospects, the best possible package going forward for this franchise. Is anybody really that devastated? I mean, obviously, losing Tulo is going to hurt, and it's going to hurt a lot of people who really love Tulo. But in the grand scheme of things, if the Rockies went out and dealt him for a large package, the package that you really want.
That you should get.
I don't know. And maybe it's just because, you know, we look at baseball a little more pragmatically than just from the fan standpoint. But
yeah.
If I was a fan, I think I'd probably be a little bit more just flat out ticked off. But,
well, you know. I don't know. Do people even like Tulo in Denver?
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. Has there ever been a great athlete who has been as disliked in Denver as Tulo? People loved
Mello.
Maybe? People loved Mello until he won it out.
True.
People loved him. Mello was a jerk.
Mello was a jerk. He was a jerk from day one.
Yeah. People love Mello. Mello, in his introductory press conference after the Nuggets drafted him, when they changed the colors to blue and yellow, you know, Mello said in the press conference, he said, they're UCLA colors. Like, so it's like dumping on the franchise back then, and people loved Mello for some reason. Tulo comes off as being aloof, and so for, you know, people who want him to be 1984 John Elway, everybody gets a little hacked off of that. But I don't know. I mean, I think just looking at it from the standpoint of what's going to be best for this franchise going forward, if the Rockies went out and just knocked out a deal with a bunch of talent, I don't think that it's really that devastating.
Oh, and we've talked about this before. Like, Tulo only cares about winning. He doesn't know how to care about anything else, which is good for a professional athlete. It's how it should be. Like, he doesn't, like, even now, he doesn't respond well to losing, which he shouldn't. He's a pro athlete. They should always have that competitive fire to want to win everything and be the best at everything. But right now, the Rockies aren't. They're not very good. And they haven't been good for a while. So it totally makes sense that he would maybe want to explore something different. And I love that everyone talks about, like, oh, well, Tulo's contract, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, it was a big contract when it was signed for 10 years, $157 million. Like, right now, that's not a
huge
contract to take off.
Yeah, it's, you know.
I mean, yeah, it's, of course, it's a big, don't get me wrong, it's a big contract, but it's not like Ryan Howard's yearly annual salary.
Right.
He's going to pay $25 million
this year. They're not still paying Bobby Bonilla.
Yeah.
You know, as a New York Mets. Like, the Rockies are, by the way, I read this the other day. The Rockies, I believe, are still paying Larry Walker. I read in a story, I'm not sure if they later restructured this or not, but Walker, I was reading in that story we talked about a few weeks ago when Walker was on about his profile in 2001 in Sports Illustrated. And in that deal, in that article, they talked about how he deferred $20 million in order to enable the Rockies to sign Mike Hampton and Denny Nagel, but that the Rockies would pay it out over the next 20 seasons. So
that's
the Rockies
awesome.
May still be paying Larry Walker, which is
that
kinda,
is a
crazy.
I love agents to do that. Those are good agents.
Yeah. See?
Those are great agents.
Exactly. That's smart. But, you know, this was obviously going to be the big topic of the week, and it's just not – there's a lot of smoke, and I don't think there's a lot of fire here.
I completely agree. I don't see anything happening within the next few months.
And you know what? If the Rockies get to the trade deadline and they're 15 games under 500 and they're trailing in the division by Lord knows how much – and they make a deal, and they pry someone like Noah Syndergaard away from a franchise that wants to make a run, then 2016 looks a lot more exciting, doesn't it?
You would think so. I mean, that's the thing. You have to get guys who are major league ready, if not already somewhat established in the big leagues with controllable years. So,
especially for a franchise like this.
Especially for a franchise like this. You need guys who can be able to control for years to come, who have a lot of talent, and who are ready for the big leagues, if not already there.
It's, yeah, man.
So, if you want to say the Mets, let's say the Mets. Could it be Noah Syndergaard? Right. Could it be Travis d'Arnaud?
Could it be Steven Matz?
Even Dilson Herrera, if they want to go that route, the infielder, could play second base. I don't know.
I think there are three teams that fit the bill. I think the Mets, the Mariners, and maybe the Pirates fit the bill. The Mets certainly are the most attractive of the teams that would fit it best, but it's not happening now. Maybe it'll happen toward the trade deadline. Who knows? But
yeah.
At this point, there was so much. I can't even imagine the excitement in the column world when Joel Sherman's report came out, but it doesn't seem like there was much to it.
No, I feel like I was asked about this at work the other day because, you know,
resident Rockies fan.
Everyone knows like, I'm a Rockies fan, and so they were asking me about like, oh, is Tulo gonna be traded, blah blah blah. And I say this happens every single year. It's nothing new. No, there's nothing to it. I don't think Bradich is a stupid person. I don't think he would do it without any kind of actual legitimate reasoning. He's not gonna kowtow to Tulo Witzke just because he says, hey, we kind of suck. Can I be traded now?
Right.
And no, he's gonna be like, well, no.
And that's a big moment for Jeff Bridges too. If Jeff Bridges is able to stand up and say, no, I'm going to do what's best for this organization, and when we find a deal that will fit you, then yeah, maybe we'll pull the trigger on that. But until then, you're going to go out and play and be a part of this organization. If that's the conversation that happened, that's a big moment for him as well.
You know what was very, very funny? I worked MLB Whip Around. This would have been Wednesday when this news really kind of broke. And Pete Rose was on the show that night. And Pete's not really known for having much of a filter.
What? Really?
Pete Rose? I know, right?
No way.
even on air. Like, we really are just terrified he's going to just swear or say something bawdy at any kind of moment on air. But he's been great so far. He's been awesome to work with. But when the news came out, they were talking about Tulo got brought up. And he literally on air, on live television, went to a baby voice and go, oh, I'm Tulo. I want to get traded. My team isn't playing well. Trade me. And I was like, wow, that's great. That actually happened on television.
That is
Pete Rose, the living hit king, just said that.
You know, I think what the Rockies need to consider ultimately going forward is Tulo and Cargo are basically going to tie up half of their payroll by next year, I think. So is that going to be a tenable situation going forward? Probably not. That's, I think, what it's ultimately going to come down. You know, there's a line in the movie Vanilla Sky that I've come back to. I saw that movie in 2001.
I am tired of people blaming Vanilla Sky for everything.
This is when I started to realize how the world was when I was like a high school junior. And there's a line in that movie that says, what is the answer to 99 out of 100 questions? Money. It doesn't matter where Tulo wants to go. It doesn't matter how good the team is playing. It doesn't matter anything. What it's going to come down to is, do the Rockies feel like they can be a competitive franchise going forward with two guys tying up half their payroll? And the chances of that are probably slim to none. So eventually, one of these guys or both of these guys is probably going to be gone, but it's not going to be next week. So I think we've settled that. The other thing that we wanted to maybe touch on a little bit, we're not going to touch on a lot, but this whole thing with Root the other night with Drew Goodman and Jeff Houston blaming Josh Hamilton for being an addict, saying that he owed the Angels an apology, Angels fans an apology, Artie Moreno an apology. That was – we're not going to talk about it much. And I said yesterday on Twitter, I think Jeff Houston is, I've said before, in the Hall of Fame of good guys. I think Drew Goodman's a good guy. Yeah, they're nice guys. I don't think they meant anything malicious, but the ignorance of that conversation was just mind-numbing. And the fact that Root didn't acknowledge it, didn't have them say anything, that conversation basically did it for me. I can't watch those broadcasts anymore. And listening to Vin Scully last night, it felt like I had been furloughed from a prison sentence. Listening to Vin Scully compared to listening to, you know, what goes on there sometimes during game broadcast.
Like Andy Dufresne getting to the outside.
Basically, I'm like, you know, I'm building roads now for that guy who bribed the warden with his wife's pie and an envelope of cash. But, like, it just – that was so disturbing the other night, and – It's really disappointing that Root did not acknowledge it and didn't at least have those two come on. And even if you're going to clarify and say, you know, this is something that we got from inside the Angels organization, we were merely relaying something like that. But for Goodman to go on Twitter and make fun of someone's typo while saying he's not condescending in the same tweet.
Yeah.
And just the whole thing was just – it really left a pretty bad taste.
And it was obviously planned because they had the graphic with the headline, He's No Angel, with a typo.
So clever. So clever. It's just – it's a – you know, we've talked a lot about how those two – you know, Jeff Huston is a phenomenal guy. Jenny Kavnar and Ryan Spielborgs and Jason Hirsch and Corey Sullivan, we love. They do great work. I think Drew Goodman, you know, is a – obviously he's got a very long pedigree in this market and elsewhere. Another very good guy. I don't think he meant anything malicious by it. I don't think he even really understood why people would be so upset.
No.
But that's the reason
that
why.
It's clear he had no idea what he was – like that what he said – would make people react the way that they did.
And
I think
that,
he was caught off guard by
it. I think makes
it
worse. I think that makes it worse because I think
it
then it's just
that,
you're showcasing
ignorance.
Your ignorance. Exactly. Yeah. So that was exceedingly disappointing.
It was tone deaf at best
and
unconscionable at worst.
Right. Legitimately offensive at worst. And we had, you know, a pretty good friend of mine who I used to work with at a radio station in town tweeted into us and said, as someone who has battled addiction problems, you have no idea how hurtful this is to hear these guys talk like this. And that is the point.
Yeah.
That's why was so discouraging that route. And you know what I think is hilarious, too? So we've got, you know, the kings of trolling over there who will just rip on the Root broadcast for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
Page one day on that thing, which I have never watched, but I saw the headline and heard some rumblings about the fallout from it in the Denver media community, came out and said the Rockies have the worst broadcasters in baseball and just trashed it for no reason. But then 2 days ago, they're publicly shaming a drug addict for battling addiction problems on TV and not a peep.
No, radio
not a
silence.
Peep about it.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, big shocker there.
Pretty incredible, right?
It was pretty disappointing, and
it's a shame because we do like a lot of people over there, and I'm not sure whose decision that was, whether it was a production decision, whether it was brought up by either Goodman or Huston, who knows? I'm not sure we'll ever know the answer to that. But as someone who works in television, I know that was a conversation that was had between everybody involved with that broadcast before the broadcast happened. And so it was a conscious decision to play it the way they were going to play it. And Goodman can say he was relaying something from the Angels organization, but then he also went on to say, in my opinion, the Angels, or he should be thanking the Angels.
Yeah, the graphic would have been offensive enough.
Yeah, like you can't have it both ways. You can't say we were relaying something from the organization and then say, well, but I'm in my opinion, they're absolutely right. You can't say that.
The graphic would have been offensive enough saying he's no angel. And also the typo was cute, saying that the Angels are going to have to play him $73 million. But to be sitting there then and passing the judgment of, you know, the Angels paid him a lot of money. He owes these people an apology. You could have just said, you know, the whole Josh Hamilton situation. He said the thing that I think most people are missing, Josh Hamilton did not miss any time, did not miss any game time because he relapsed with drugs and alcohol. Josh Hamilton had shoulder surgery and wouldn't have been playing anyway. So I don't even get where the idea comes from that he owes someone an apology for what? Hurting his shoulder?
Yeah, which he had trouble problems before.
Exactly. Yeah. It's basically the equivalent of saying, like, well, he was diagnosed with a terminal illness and he really owes this team an apology.
Yeah.
Are you serious? Are you serious with that? And he didn't miss any time because of the relapse anyway. He missed time because he had a shoulder injury. So it's ridiculous. The whole thing was ridiculous. It was offensive, and it was exceedingly disappointing that Root did not even acknowledge it.
Yeah, it was one of the lowest points of the Root broadcast I've ever seen in my entire life. That was bad. That was really, really bad. And to not bring it up again, not even say like, hey, you know what? I realized something said yesterday could have been deemed as offensive. I apologize for that. You know, just say that, you know, just
anything.
Come out with like a you know, base, you know, paint by numbers apology and just move on from it. At least you can say like, well, at least they acknowledge they did something wrong. No, there's nothing there.
Pretty disappointing.
Very, very disappointing.
But the Rockies did end last night on a positive note and finally got that 11-game losing streak snap. Tonight, they will very excitingly go against Clayton Kershaw. They've actually seen pretty well this season. They hit him well last time out at Coors Field, and you know he's not going against Jorge De La Rosa. He is going against another guy who struggled with his command in Eddie Butler, but we'll see if the Rockies can surprise some people and maybe start, you know, turning this thing around a little bit. But last night was a fun way to end that game, especially after the rain delay and everything. Real fun way to see that game come to an end, and a positive thing to talk about for once.
Wait, are we ready for Mr. Badler?
Who?
Ben Badler of Baseball America?
What? Is he on the show today?
No, he's not.
I don't even – I can't even handle it. I can't even handle it.
Well,
it is a watershed
together,
moment.
Tyler.
It's a watershed moment in the history of the Purple Dinosaur podcast.
It's a watership down moment.
The one, the only Ben Badler of Baseball America joins the show next. Well, we always said that there was going to come an end to this podcast, and it would be the day that we got Ben Badler from Baseball America. So, Ben, you're ushering in the end of the Purple Dinosaur podcast. How does it make you feel?
That's a lot of pressure, man. That's kind of tough.
So here it is. This is actually happening now.
This.
So, yeah, we probably should get the whole explanation out of the way. So, I don't know, sometime about a year ago, I mean, whenever the 2014 Rocky season fell apart, so like a week after opening day, we decided, like, you know, it'd be an interesting topic to talk about. So many Cuban defections lately. Ben Badler has a ton of stuff on that, whatever. And I sent a couple emails, and I think they got bounced back. And so then we just started this inside joke week after week of, like, you know, it's coming on the show next. Ben Badler's going to join the show next week. And so for a year now, basically, Ben, you've closed all of our shows, which has probably got to feel a little strange for us to just pop, like, hey, we've been telling an inside joke about you for a year.
Well, I thought about maybe not taking the call today and just leaving you guys to go back to your podcast and say, no, we really had him on this time.
I swear, you guys.
You just didn't come on. But then I realized there was a Twitter paper trail between us, and it wouldn't have worked out. So I figured I should probably just come on this time.
It wouldn't stand up in court.
If you'd have canceled at the last minute, it would have been probably the most crushing blow we've ever taken, because we've been talking about it all week. Everybody was so excited. And oh, man, we talked about it beforehand. That could have just been just damaging to our reputation as a free podcast.
It would have been like the boy who cried wolf type thing, so that's why I wanted to throw it out there and do it, but then it was, that's probably not a good idea.
We would have just to say, it would have been like the Seinfeld episode with George going to date the girl, and it's actually a meatpacking plant, it's not a club where he goes. That would have been, we were just imagining that we had this Twitter conversation with Ben. Like, no, I swear, Ben was going to come on, it was unbelievable. But now, so we're like breaking, this is podcast ground, and we always figured that we were going to hit our apex the day that we actually got you on. So no pressure, Ben. But welcome to the show. And I think we catch you at a good time, because earlier this week, you got a chance to hit up the New Britain Rock Cats, who I think haven't lost a game this season, as it seems, and are
pretty
extremely
much
talented. Tell us about what you saw from New Britain. I think they're 25-7 now. They've lost, I believe, one home game this
season.
26-7. And that team is loaded. But who are some of the guys who really impressed you on New Britain?
Yeah, that's if you're going to see a team in that Rockies organization, that's a good one to see. So I was excited to see them come through here and watch them play. And, you know, the guys on that team that I went in to see were David Dahl, the center fielder, the catcher, Tommy Murphy, and the shortstop, Trevor Story. And, you know, Dahl's numbers are clearly the worst of anybody of that group of three guys, but it was pretty obvious that he was the best prospect on that team. This is a guy who's, you know, all five tools have a chance to be, you know, 50s to 60 or better on the 20-80 scale. And, you know, early in the season, he, just from talking to guys who saw him, talking to scouts who saw him early in the season, and talking to David himself, you know, I think really what happened was he really got away from his approach and his timing was off. I just wrote about him on our site today at Baseball America, and in the conversation that I had with David, I think he used the word timing or being on time or some variation of that at least a dozen times in our conversation after the game. And usually timing is something mechanical. I mean, he does have a leg lift in his swing, and there's some pre-pitch movement, so maybe that contributes somewhat to being a little bit late on some pitches. But for him, he seemed to think a lot of it was more mental and more about his approach. He was kind of committing to a lot of pitches early and just chasing a lot of bad pitches out of the strike zone. He's not an extremely patient guy who's going to rack up a ton of walks, but he usually stays within the strike zone and doesn't chase too many pitches off the plate. And that just wasn't happening for him early in the season. He was chasing too many pitches that he shouldn't be swinging at. And he realized that, and he made an adjustment, and the series I saw him play, he looked outstanding. I mean, he was, he was squaring up fastballs pretty consistently. He was sitting on fastballs. If pitches were out of the strike zone, he was letting them go. There were some times where there was some swing and miss on some off-speed stuff, but this guy has an outstanding swing. It's really lightning fast hands, short, quick, compact stroke. He stays inside the ball. He hits to all fields. If the pitch is on the outer third, he can go the other way and drive it that way. Even some of his outs were hit pretty hard. But he showed everything. I mean, I didn't get a great sense for him in the field, but from talking to guys who saw him and talking to the manager, they were really impressed with his defense, which goes with all of our previous reports on him from scouts. So, his numbers aren't where I'm sure he wants them to be right now, but I think that by the second half of the season or from here on going forward, I think you're going to see his numbers jump up a lot. And this is a guy too who, missed a lot of last or I shouldn't say missed a lot of last season, but didn't play much in high A last year. So he's not skipping a level, but this is a guy who they've moved him pretty aggressively last year. So for him to struggle a little bit out of the gate, especially making a big jump to double A, which is one of the bigger jumps you have to make as a prospect, for him to struggle a little bit early with his timing doesn't surprise me. But I think he's going to have I think his numbers are going to significantly improve the rest of the season. He was definitely the best prospect on that team that I saw.
Yeah, just going off that, he hit .222 in April, but he's hit .340 in May. He's on an 11-game hit streak. He's homered in back-to-back days. But you mentioned this, that his swing is all about the timing, a little bit of a lot of motion before the pitch happens. Do you think with that, he could be prone to prolonged streaks as he goes up higher in the organization?
It's possible. I think for him, this is more just an adjustment period of, it seems like they were talking to Dahl. I mean, it's his swing. He would know better than anybody else. He didn't seem to think like there were any major mechanical adjustments that he was making. But from talking to some folks who had seen him earlier this year and last year too, it sounded like he was tweaking around a little bit, some stuff with his mechanics. And I think it was just a matter of him getting into rhythm early in the season. So it's possible you could see some streakiness going forward, but I think for him, this is just a matter of a kind of a brief adjustment period to double A and to getting started early in the season. So I don't see it as a major problem going forward for him, because he really does have a great swing when he's on time and he's staying in within his approach. I mean, he does all the things you want to see in a really good hitter.
Another guy you mentioned before when you were watching New Britain was Trevor Story. And Story's been a guy that we've followed for a long time here. It seems like he's been in the organization since the Coolidge administration, but he's only 22 years old. And did the same thing last year. Struggled when his first trip in Modesto repeated the level last year, set the world on fire in the first couple of months. Had struggles last year in Double A. Now with New Britain, he is still hitting about .350 this year, 32 games into the season. Extra base power's there. He's got some stolen bases. The walks are there. Strikeouts are still there too, but that's kind of going to be his game. What did you see from Trevor Story when you were there seeing him just last week? And what do you see can project him for the future, especially now with the rumors that Troy Tulowitzki is possibly on the outs in Denver?
I must have seen the two worst games of Trevor Story's season. Because I was so excited to see him, and I've, like you guys said, I was so excited about this guy when he was coming off that year in Asheville. Yeah, Asheville's a great place to hit, but this is a guy who's got some, really quick hands. He's got some, pretty good power for a middle infielder, whether it's, shortstop, second base, some swing and miss issues, but I didn't see, anything alarming in the contact rate, and he showed some patience at the plate, some ability to steal some bases too. There were a lot of things to like about him, and then the next year he goes to the Cal League in 2013 and just, completely falls apart, is swinging and missing a ton.
80-some strikeouts, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was bad. And then he goes back to the league, and it's like, all right, now he's tearing it up again. He's still 21 years old. This is the Trevor Story that we thought we were going to get after that big year in Asheville, and then goes to Double A the second half of the year, and it all kind of falls apart for him again. So this year I was excited. I mean, he's got great numbers this year, but again, it's to me, if we're talking about a streaky player, that's got to be Trevor Story, because when I saw him, there was just a ton of swing and miss. You know, I saw him for a three-game series. He sat out the last game just because I think he played almost he might have played every single game for them this season. So I think he just needed a day off. But yeah, there was a lot of swing and miss on fastballs, getting beat in the strike zone, chasing pitches out of the strike zone, breaking balls away. I was surprised at just how much swing and miss there was for him in that series. I mean, there was one, you know, he roped a double down the left field line that I saw because he does have really quick hands, and when he stays balanced within his swing, he shows you flashes of that. But there were a lot of times where he was caught off balance and over swinging, and I think that got him into a lot of trouble during that series.
Ben, let's talk a little bit about Tommy Murphy. The Rockies have always struggled historically to develop catching prospects, and Murphy seems like a guy who might be able to turn the page on that somewhat. Last year missed a lot of time with the labrum injury, but this year they wanted to, I know, get him kind of back healthy and into game speed at AA. How has he been handling that so far? He's a northern kid. He's, I think, a Buffalo native, so he's not, you know, too averse to playing in the Eastern League, as a lot of guys from Texas and California, as he actually said on Rock Cats Media Day, he kind of laughed about. But how has he looked so far coming back from the injury and getting back into Double A?
Solid. He looks solid. There's nothing, you know, you see David Dahl, and it's easy to see the tools jump out right away and the quickness of the swing. But Murphy is, there's nothing flashy about him. Everything is just fairly steady. I mean, there's, you know, there is some stiffness to the swing, but it's a line drive stroke. There's, and he's showing power this year too. There's some power in the bat. You know, there is some swing and miss there. I'm not sure if it's an everyday profile. I think certainly has enough there to both offensively and defensively to be a backup catcher at the least. But I think there is a chance for him to be an everyday guy. Like you said, a little bit of a delayed development path just because of the time he's missed. But you know, very solid. Even a lot of his hits were, a lot of his outs were hard hit. So there's nothing that really jumps out as, oh, this is a plus tool that he's showing or anything that really jumps out at you right away. But just a very solid guy. You can solid catch and throw skills, and a guy with a pretty solid line drive stroke who should be a big leaguer in some capacity. It's just, you know, there's some split about whether it's a backup guy or someone who could be an everyday catcher for you.
Yeah, I mean, this year, obviously, the Rockies have a new regime in charge with Jeff Bridges taking over Dan O'Dowd as the general manager position. And since somebody who works with the scouting organizations, Ben, and you work for Baseball America, and you can see the national thought about the Rockies and how they're able to develop not only good position players, but good pitchers as well, because we've seen this a lot where they pick up guys like who are big time prospects like Drew Pomeranz or Alex White, and they don't do particularly well with the Rockies, but then move on to other organizations and become successful big leaguers. We kind of want to know what the national thought is about the Rockies as a draft and development program, because as we've mentioned many times on the Twitter account and on the podcast, the Denver media thinks that that's a ridiculous idea for the Rockies and they should start signing big name pitchers. And apparently, according to Woody Page, people from Venezuela, because that is where all the good talent is. So, well, what's the national thought?
Big
about
analysis.
Yeah, it's beautiful analysis. So what's the national idea about how the Rockies are as a draft and development program?
I don't know that there's anything that in particular that jumps out in terms of something they're lacking right now in terms of the development of their prospects. I think if you look at their Latin American program, I think certainly that's been a strength of the organization over the years, going back to signing guys like Ubaldo Jimenez and Yoelis Chacin and a lot of, you know, William Rosario. They've had a lot of success signing a lot of Latin American talent and developing that through the system over the years on, you know, especially given the budget that they have had. This is not a team that's been, you know, until recently throwing around any million-dollar signing bonuses. It's a team right. That's really been in the mid to lower level range of the investment in Latin America, and they've still gotten a pretty strong return on their program there. So I think that's been a strength for them. But yeah, certainly I think they need to get more you know, I guess it helps to be picking at the top of the draft again, but they, well, you know, that's how you get a guy like Troy Tulowitzki. But yeah, a lot of the, you know, the recent high level picks and a lot of guys getting injured, it seems like have come through the organization. Not that that's a problem that's unique to the Rockies, but yeah, certainly I think, you know, especially in that market, you need to, every team talks about how they need to be committed to scouting and player development, but that's not, it's not unique to the Rockies by any means. Every organization talks about doing that, but, you know, the farm system is in, it's in solid shape right now. But you know, I do think they could do, you know, there certainly is more they could do to bring more homegrown talent through the farm system.
Don't tell the only newspaper in town that other teams draft and develop, because that hot take will not fly. Your logical analysis will not fly in this town, Ben. Come on. You noted the Rocky success in the Latin American program. And one of the things that I think we've been really interested in, especially really over the last probably year or so, building up to some events that happened in December, was there seemed to have been a large rash of Cuban defections last year. 2014 seemed to be big for that. The Rockies were in on Jose Abreu, as we have heard, for a while. They haven't had a whole lot. Anthony did some research a little while ago. They've actually only had five Cuban-born players to play in the organization, but at the major league level, that is. But things are obviously going to change. And Ben, I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about what you see as the outlook now for that situation. Because for people who aren't familiar, obviously Puerto Rico falls under the Major League Baseball draft umbrella. But countries like the Dominican Republic or Colombia or Panama or Venezuela, some countries that have produced some to a lot of talent, are kind of the Wild West. They're somewhat open grounds for teams to go in, find young players, development, sign them, all that kind of stuff. With Cuba now, should the embargo be lifted, how do you see that playing out? Is that going to be a situation where Major League Baseball pushes to get that under the draft, or is Cuba going to be the next Dominican Republic, or how do you think that that whole thing is going to shake out?
That's a good question. Like you said, for anything to have a significant impact, the, you know, for teams to suddenly be able to sign players who are still living and still citizens of Cuba, they would have to actually end the embargo, which has not happened yet, but certainly the writing is on the wall that it seems to be trending in that direction. And if that happens, you know, I don't think anybody knows for certain what's going to happen. And that includes the commissioner's office. They don't know what they're going to do if that happens, because it would just be such a monumental change from the system is now, where you have to, you know, in almost every case, you have to leave the country illegally and then establish residency in another country, whether it's Mexico or Haiti or the Dominican Republic or some other country, to be considered an international free agent. So, you know, I think if the embargo ever does end and there is some new system in place, I think it's going to depend on what happens in the new CBA, whether there's an international draft, whether it's, you know, one draft or a true worldwide draft. But Cuba doesn't really fit into that. It's you know, and neither does a country like, you know, Japan that has its, or Korea that has its own professional league. Every country is unique, but Cuba especially. So I think if the embargo does end, there's really two things that the Cuban government and the Cuban baseball officials are going to want. One is to be able to keep their league, Serie Nacional, up and running. You know, it's a 16-team league right now. You know, whether maybe they cut it down to 8 teams or modify the structure of the league, that will be one possibility. But they don't want all of a sudden to have major league teams coming in and setting up academies or coming in and signing away their best 16-year-old, 17-year-old, 18-year-old players the way they do in the Dominican Republic and Venezuela and other countries. So they're going to want to make sure that their league is still up and running and can still continue to, I guess I can't say flourish, because it's certainly not flourishing right now with all the talent that's been drained out of their league from all the players who've left. But they want to make sure that that league continues to operate. That's a major source of pride for them. And then the second thing is, you know, if Cuban players are going to leave, they want to be able to make money off these players. And we've already seen that with some of the deals that they've brokered with players, Cuban players going to play in Japan over the summer, which is the off season for Cuba.
Right.
So they'll play, you know, Alfredo Despaigne or Frederick Cepeda or some other, and a couple other players too have played in Cuba. And then the Cuban government basically brokers these contracts with these Japanese teams, and the Cuban government takes a pretty healthy cut of those deals, and the players can go to Japan and play, and then they come home at the end of the Japanese season. And then they are basically playing year-round, which is must be exhausting for the players. But it's an opportunity for them to make some money and play overseas. So, you know, we've seen that also. You know, there's some players going to play in Canada this year. There were some players who went to play in the Mexican League, although it sounds like that avenue is going to be shut off just because of the relationship it has with minor league and Major League Baseball. But I think you'll probably see some sort of a similar system along the lines of, you know, the posting system right now that MLB has with Nippon Professional Baseball in Japan, with the league in Korea, and almost to some degree with the Mexican League, where teams are signing player, or, you know, if you're signing a player from Mexico, whether it's, you know, the Dodgers with Julio Urias or the Blue Jays with Roberto Osuna, you know, a few years back, you know, these they're not signing an amateur player out of Mexico, even though they are 16 years old. These guys are already signed with Mexican League teams in you know, the overwhelming majority of the cases. So you're basically purchasing these players directly from Mexican League teams, and then, you know, the Mexican League team keeps 75% of the money, which is another story. But I think you'll see some sort of a hybrid system between what MLB teams do with signing Mexican players out of the Mexican League and then the posting system that is in place with leagues in Korea and Japan. The difference is you're not going to see – I don't think you're going to see teams going into Cuba and signing 16-year-old kids the way you do in the way they do in Mexico. I think there's going to be a certain amount of time where, okay, you spent your service time, the X number of years in Cuba. Now you're eligible to be posted to a major league team. But again, there's a lot of unknown. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. It could be 10 years away. It could be sooner than that. But it's certainly something that they're discussing right now in the commissioner's office, and everybody's trying to think about and plan for, because it's, you know, it could change quickly.
That's fascinating to see what's going to happen with it in the next few years. But we've touched on it. The Rockies have had a lot of success with their Latin American players in drafts and development, whether it's, you know, getting guys like Raimel Tapia, who's now in Modesto, hitting over almost 350 as well from the Dominican Republic, or with drafting guys like Forrest Wall, who's done very well. And Tyler, I know I mentioned Forrest Wall, so just be careful. I know
you got
a man.
Finally,
crush on
some Forrest talk.
That's okay. You actually had a funny tweet the other day, Ben, when John Wall hurt his hand. You saw that Wall hurt his hand. You thought, oh my God, I hope Forrest is okay. So yeah, I know you're obviously a fan of Forrest Wall. So are we on the podcast. Is there anybody in the Rockies organization right now that may sneak up on some people this year with just a solid campaign, wherever it may be?
Yeah, no, I wasn't. It's funny how I wasn't even trying to like be cute or anything. It's really just, I think there's another, I want to say college basketball player named Kaminsky. You guys might know.
Yeah, Frank
Kaminsky, yeah.
Okay. So does he play for Kentucky? I don't know.
Wisconsin, right? Yeah.
Okay. So some prominent team. And I kept seeing his name pop up in the, on Twitter. And I kept thinking about, oh, there must be something about the, you know, the Rockies pitching prospect, Rob Kaminsky. But obviously this is not what normal sports fans or normal human beings would go towards. So, you mentioned, Tapia, you mentioned Wall. Ryan McMahon is a guy who is not, you know, he's not, I wouldn't call him under the radar by any means, but I think in general, his skill set is is underrated. I'm not saying he's not Nolan Arenado. He's a different kind of offensive player than Arenado was in the minor leagues. Arenado was a guy who always had tremendous bat-to-ball skills and excellent hand-eye coordination. He probably even worked against him to some extent when he was in the lower levels of the minor leagues, just because he could hit anything, whether it was in the strike zone or out of the strike zone. But I always really liked Arenado just because of that combination of ability to square the ball up and being able to drag the ball for power. And with him, the defense really came along. I mean, there were questions about him even being able to stick at third base when he was, really young. And you look at him and just watching the game, the other night, it's like he's making two unbelievable plays. It's like standard for him in
every
any
night,
game.
Every night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just an unbelievable defender. But that wasn't the case when he was in the minor leagues, or at least early in his minor league career. Whereas McMahon is, I mean, he's already, to me, he already shows that he can be an above average defender at third base. Obviously, the guy's an outstanding athlete. Certainly, he's a different kind of player than Arenado is at the plate. I think there's certainly a lot of power potential. There's more swing and miss, but I think he's got some, he's got some patience. He's not just up there swinging at everything. He'll see pitches. He'll work the count, and I think that he has the aptitude and the swing to be able to make more contact as he moves up the ladder. I think you're already starting to see some of that this year, even though the power hasn't been there. And then if you want a guy who's a little bit lower, or actually a lot lower in the system, Eric Julio is a guy who they signed him out of Columbia a couple of years ago. He was signed the same year the Rangers signed Marcos Duplan and actually traded him the next year to the Brewers in the Giovanni Gallardo trade. But that year, Duplan was the best pitching prospect available, but Julio was the number two guy, and Julio is a guy who has, probably just as deep of a repertoire as Duplan had, but he's got more size and more physical projection. This is a guy who's got a chance to have three average to above average pitches and really good feel for pitching. He's not just he's young. He's certainly got a long way to go.
He's 18.
In terms of refining everything, and I'm sure they're gonna. The Rockies are always very conservative the way they bring along their young Latin American prospects, especially their pitchers who especially these they're very skinny. They want to make sure they get strong and accustomed to being able to handle a bigger workload, even if it is just in just in Grand Junction or in one of their short season leagues. So I think you'll probably see Julio on a similar path to what you saw with a guy like Antonio Senzatella or a lot of the other young Latin American prospects that they've developed. But if it all comes together for him, this is a guy who's got a chance to be maybe a mid rotation starter or better, because I think there's still some more velocity left in the tank for him.
He is Ben Badler of Baseball America. Ben, we would keep you for the entire hour if we could, but we should probably let you. I'm sure you have a normal, real life that doesn't involve talking on Rockies podcast. We should probably get you out of here. But Ben is on Twitter. You can follow him at Ben Badler. You can read his stuff at Baseball America, national writer. Some of my favorite stuff that Ben does and has always done is his coverage of international baseball. A lot of stuff up on some Cuban prospects. The top 20 Cuban prospects actually came out at the end of last month. That story on David Dahl is up today for Baseball America subscriber. You can check it out there at baseballamerica.com. And Ben, we could not thank you enough for finally fulfilling our inside joke dream. And maybe we won't end the show after today. I think this was so good, maybe we'll keep it going.
I like that.
Ben, thanks a ton, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Ben.
Thanks, guys.
It has been such a long journey for us to get here.
Ben
Badler
of Tyler
Baseball America.
I'm gonna say
finally
we go on next week.
What?
I'm going to say we don't wrap it up.
No way.
I say we have an episode next week. I think we can go on from this. We can build off it.
This is revolutionary.
I'm just saying.
We thought, you know, we thought with Ben Badler we were going to just kill the show. But unfortunately for all of you, probably going to keep going.
You guys aren't that lucky.
Big thanks to Ben Badler of Baseball America for finally joining the show. And, again, you can follow Ben on Twitter. He's at Ben Badler. Check him out on baseballamerica.com. And a lot of really good stuff there about Rockies prospects, fascinating stuff about Cuba. And we'll talk to Ben again as the season rolls along. Since we only planned through this episode, I don't know what we got coming up next week. I don't know.
Oh, God.
We're done running through minor league affiliates. You know.
I can ask some people at work.
Okay. Yeah, do that. Yeah. See if Pete Rose wants to come on. Do it. Next week, Pete Rose from Fox Sports 1 joins the show.
No, do not say that.
Big thanks to our guys Rumors Follow for leading us into and out of the show today. They're playing us out with a song tonight. There'll be a Denver Day of Rock on Saturday, May 23rd. You can check out the hashtag DDOR15 on Twitter. You can also check out DenverDayOfRock.com. That's on the 16th Street Mall. Matt Carney's going to be there. St. Paul and the Broken Bones are going to be there. And Rumors Follow will be there as well. And also Monday, May 25th, the Boulder Boulder. They'll be playing near the 7-kilometer marker during the Boulder Boulder. So get pumped. You can go check out Rumors Follow there. Thanks to them. Thanks to our guys at ESPN Denver and at Purple Row for hosting the podcast as always. And you can go give them follows on Twitter as well. I am at Tyler Mon. He is at Mastertones, and we are on Twitter as the podcast at Purple Dinocast. You can also head to humblemonster.com. Check out Purple Dinosaur Podcast t-shirts. We've got new designs headed the way of old Humble Monster here very shortly.
And I think you're going to like them.
Yeah, and they're going to be a lot of fun. So we're going to have a ton of fun with that throughout the season. And again, our biggest thanks to Ben Badler for joining the show.
Yeah, I can't believe that actually happened after all this time. We got to find another joke.
We're a year into the podcast. We've already had Jason Parks and Ben Badler. Oh, and Larry Walker and Dante.
Oh, and Jonah Carey.
We've had some fun with this show.
We've had a lot of fun with the show.
And next week when Pete Rose comes on, it's going to be terrible.
No. I'm cutting that one off right now.
He's Anthony Masterson. I'm Tyler Mon. We'll talk to you next week. Bye. Lose your troubled mind. Dancing with the devil in the light. Fragile.
Suffering creeps up again. I cage my thoughts, I breathe the sin. Flying high, right through the ceiling. Lose yourself, lose your troubled mind. Dancing with the devil. For the movies.
And it's all because, like, it takes, like, 4 gallons of water to make, like, one almond.
Really?
That's what almonds are for. Yeah, like almonds are, like, a big export of California or something like that. I don't know. But it's so fucking weird. Because they're like, yeah, like, well, why don't we just, like, grow the almonds somewhere else? Because it takes, like a gallon of water to make, like, one almond.
So what you're saying is a two-day rainstorm probably not going to save the California almond industry?
Not going to do it.
That's lame.
Yeah, well, what do you expect? It's almonds, dude. It's just Chinatown, Jake.
What?
What?
Huh?
What?
Also, avocados, too, right?
Yes.
Are we losing all of our avocados?
I think avocados are fine.
Oh. What? Why? How could they be fine? There's no rain.
Like that Blind Melon song?
I was just going to say, like Blind Melon. Blind Melon would be so proud of what's currently going on in California.
No, they wouldn't, because that guy's dead, right? That guy died, like, right away. Like, the lead singer, that's why they're not a band anymore, and they haven't been for, like, 20 years. The lead singer of Blind Melon, I'm pretty sure, died.
Is that my life is pretty plain? I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Also, Blind Melon, if you look him up on Wikipedia, Blind Melon stylized as capital B-L, lowercase I-N-D, capital M, lowercase E, capital L, lowercase O, capital N. Stylized as... the way that girls typed on AOL Instant Messenger in the late 90s.
Wow.
Apparently.
That's a good one.
Yeah, this guy died. Shannon Hoon, H-O-O-N.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Cocaine overdose.
I want to say he died like almost like right after that song became popular.
October 21st, 1995.
There you go.
And let's see when that was released. Let's see. 93 was when that song came out. Man. Look at you and your weird music knowledge.
Yeah, like, you gotta do, like, a lot of cocaine. I feel like way more cocaine to die from than heroin, is that right?
You know how I know that I would be terrible at doing... You know how I know that I would be terrible at doing drugs? When I, like, have a weird dream and I wake up... Like, you know where you wake up and you're still sort of in the dream and you're like, oh, man, I don't know what's going on. I freak out enough at that, like, I would be the worst person to take drugs. So I would have, like, one weird thought, and then my brain would just explode.
Yeah, it's like an immediate bad trip.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are, like, I have those sober. Like, my brain works stupidly enough sober.
Like, no, man, just take some mushrooms. It'll be great. Like, but
this
just don't think bad thoughts.
Man, no, I would be terrible. I would be the worst person ever.
Don't think bad thoughts, you idiot. Otherwise, you're going to get caught in a hellscape.
Oh, Hidden Track is about drug use this week. That's fun.
Hooray!